Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Kelly Ramsey. She studied poetry at the University of Virginia and fiction writing at the University of Pittsburgh. She co-founded the Lighthouse Works Artist Residency and later moved to Northern California, where she worked for the U.S. Forest Service as a trail maintenance worker, a wilderness ranger, and a wildland firefighter. Her writing has appeared in the Washington Post, Sierra Magazine, and other media. Kelly Ramsey now lives in Redding, California, and she's the author of a new memoir, Wildfire Days: A Woman, a Hotshot Crew, and the Burning American West. Welcome to the Exchange, Kelly.
Hi, Mike. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, your personal journey from poetry and fiction writing to fighting wildfires seems quite a story. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Frankfort, Kentucky, and then in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
What was your childhood like?
It was a little rough in some ways. My parents split up when I was about 18 months old, and my dad moved pretty far away, and I only saw him about once a year. In other ways, I had a great childhood, basically middle class, got to play outside a lot, run around with my friends. But my family was, kind of fractured from the beginning, and that was tough. And then my dad later became an alcoholic. So yeah, mixed childhood, I would say.
What inspired you to write poetry?
Oh my goodness. I guess, I was 19 and in college and read one of my first books of poetry and just totally fell in love and took a poetry writing class in that first year. And I just thought, this is it. This is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. And of course, it wasn't, but that's what I thought when I was 19.
Well, you've taken a lot of different turns in your life. Your memoir actually reads like a fiction novel. Why'd you write it?
I went to fight fire. Well, first I joined the Forest Service on a trail crew, then became a wilderness ranger. Then I got into fighting fire, and I had all but given up on writing at that point. I sort of thought, this isn't really working out. I don't know if I'm ever going to publish a book, so I might as well find something else that fulfills me. So I loved the outdoors, and when I found the Forest Service and got into both of those lines of work, I loved it so incredibly much, and fighting fire was just the most extraordinary thing I had ever done. And so when I finished the two seasons, I just sort of thought, I've had this incredible experience that a lot of people don't know about or don't fully understand. And I have, hopefully, the skills to write it. And I was just sort of like, I have to write about this. And when I started writing, I kind of couldn't stop. So the book almost wrote itself, or the book wrote me rather than me writing it,
Well, your skills certainly shine through. I thought I was reading a novel. Can you read an excerpt from your first chapter?
Absolutely. Okay, so this is from chapter one, and I am describing Happy Camp, essentially. Wildfires had ravaged the Klamath Mountains for decades, worsening each year since the 90s. In a world rising to a rolling simmer, fire in California was a biblical crisis, and here was its hellish heart, a forest so hot, steep, overgrown with brush, and strangled by poison oak that it was notorious among firefighters, who made their feelings known on a popular t-shirt, F the Klamath. For the right person, though, the Klamath was paradise, its beauty reinforced by its difficulty. To stay, you had to be pretty stupid, very tough, just plain poor, or so in love with the forest you couldn't tear yourself away. I might have been all of the above. The local itinerants, who camped under the Indian Creek Bridge, shuffled along the highway, shaking their fists at invisible foes. Meth had taken their teeth, now it was after their minds. Yet in the water, salmon defied the dams, a contested issue with a bumper sticker, "Undam the Klamath." They swam to the ocean and ran upstream each fall, seeking their ancestral creeks to spawn and die. At dawn, fishermen stood waist-deep in the muscle of the current, casting their flies. Grayback Road lost county maintenance near the crest. Through winter, the route was buried, but in spring, locals with souped-up trucks plowed a single, perilous lane through the snow. That April had been warm, and I felt lucky to encounter only patches of melting ice as I followed Indian Creek's Green Canyon north, out of our forest, over the spine of the crest, and down the other side into the damp, heady woods of Oregon. Near the top of the pass, a faded wooden picnic table slouched at an overlook. On my first day with the Forest Service, a couple years before, we had stopped there and piled out, looking across the valley. I took in the sea of trees, crevasses spilling into deeper canyons, ridge upon ridge, a vast rippling quilt of green earth darkening to blue where the mountains met the horizon, over a million acres of forest. "Welcome to your office," our boss, Jeff, had said. "Sucks, doesn't it?" As I navigated the pass, I wondered, how the hell did I end up here?
My guest is Kelly Ramsey, author of Wildfire Days, A Woman, a Hotshot Crew, and the burning American West. Well, that's a really good question you asked. How did you end up there?
Well, my path through life was really circuitous. From growing up kind of in the Southeast and the East Coast, I went to college in Virginia. I went to grad school in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And then I moved to Texas. And then I moved to New York. And then I moved back to Texas. Anyway, long story short, I was living in Texas and I had gotten really into backpacking and kind of taking these solo trips in the wilderness. And I wanted to change. And I saw this post from the guy who was at the time the director of recreation in Happy Camp. And it said, volunteer rangers needed, something like, you know, come work for the summer in the wilderness and learn all the skills you need to launch a career in public lands. And I was like, that's it, you know, because I didn't have a forestry degree or an environmental science degree. You know, I didn't really have what you needed to become a park ranger or a wilderness ranger. But, you know, this post promised that you could come and get the experience and start your career. And so I saved my money, quit my job, put everything in storage, just hopped in my truck and drove to Happy Camp sight unseen. And started working on this trail maintenance crew. So that is how I ended up out here.
That is amazing. So no plan.
No plan, no backup, not much money. You know, just sort of hopefully this will work out and I'll start a new career. And, you know, luckily it did. I worked as a volunteer that first summer and then applied for a real job with the Forest Service. And my second summer, I was able to be a wilderness ranger in Happy Camp, which was pretty much the dream job, except that it only paid $16 an hour.
So, Kelly, you went from poetry to fiction writing to firefighting?
Yeah, a kind of unlikely scenario. And I, you know, not only did I have sort of a different background in education from a lot of people on my crew, but you know, I was the only woman my first year and I was much older than most people, so kind of, you know, an odd duck in a lot of ways. And I was really lucky that my crew was open-minded and fair-minded, and they were ready to respect and accept me as long as I did the work, which I did.
How old were you?
I was 38 when I rookied on the crew.
That is amazing.
Or insane. It's debatable.
Tell me about the firebug.
The firebug. Okay, this is a phrase in firefighting culture for, you know, getting bitten by the firebug is when you go on your first fire or fires and you're just hooked. And it happens to a lot of people, not everyone, obviously. Some people think it's, you know, way too hard or miserable. But for the people who end up staying in the profession or at least getting into it seriously, you go to your first fire and you're like, wow, I had no idea that work like this existed. You know, for me, turns out I love grueling, punishing hikes and I love digging fire line for 16 hours a day. And I love the feeling of doing something that hopefully is helping to protect people and that, you know, work that matters. So yeah, the firebug is when you go to that first fire and you're like, wait a minute, I think I need to do this.
Well, when you write about this, it really does sound grueling. I mean, you're a very good writer, so you give us a really good description of the work and the challenges that are involved in it, and you being the only woman on the team. Tell me about the Rowdy River Hotshots. Who are they?
Well, so first of all, that's a pseudonym for the crew. That's not the real name of the crew. So all the people's names on the crew and also the name of the group and the river and the town have all been changed just to protect the privacy because a lot of those people are still on the same crew. But without giving their real name, it's a crew based in far, far Northern California. And all hotshot crews are composed of about 20 to 25 people. And hotshots usually are assigned to fight the toughest or most remote sections of a wildfire. So there's a lot of special training that goes into preparing for that work, hiking up steep slopes, carrying 45 to 70 pounds, needing to run a mile and a half in under 10 minutes and 30 seconds. It's kind of a training montage of push-ups, pull-ups, sit-ups, dips, weightlifting, sprints. So you have to do all that. And then there's also a lot of classroom training and technical qualifications that go into knowing how to perform all the skills, which, yeah, can get quite technical and difficult. So, yeah, my crew, like all Hot Shot crews, is pretty elite, pretty competitive, and extremely hardworking and tough. And it's definitely an intimidating place to show up as, you know, the only woman and someone with a bit less experience than most people.
You were a novice. How did you get on a Hot Shot crew?
I'm not sure. I think I talked my way in. One of the things about getting onto a Hot Shot crew is that eagerness and, you know, almost being aggressive about getting on makes a difference. So I applied and then I kept emailing them and calling them, and I drove over the Siskiyou Crest and showed up and was like, hey, I'm Kelly. I really want to work here. And that makes a huge difference. And I think for them, even though I had very little fire experience, I had just filled in on a what's called a Type 2 initial attack crew in Happy Camp. I'd filled in there for a few months, but that's really not much experience at all. They really seemed to value that I had been a wilderness ranger. So I had spent, you know, weeks backpacking around the woods carrying at least 50 pounds. So they were like, okay, we think that you'll probably be able to handle the physical nature of the job, and you're clearly eager to be here. So they kind of took a chance on me, I guess.
Well, you're right about the gear that firefighters wear, even the cost of the boots, which I found pretty exorbitant.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, $500 to $700 is quite a bit, but they should last you at least a couple seasons, depending. Like, hotshots go through boots pretty quickly, but the Forest Service does reimburse. I forget exactly what it was. They reimburse some of the cost of your boots, but they only do it every 4 years or something, and only for certain a few hundred dollars. So yeah, people are shelling out quite a bit, but the boots matter almost more than anything else. You know, like, you're on your feet all the time, so you need some good footwear.
Sounds like your lifeline.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me about the gear that you had to carry.
Okay, so you carry what's known as line gear, which is basically a special firefighting backpack. So it sits low on your hips and then has these straps that kind of come to a T in the back. So it allows a lot of freedom of motion for either running a chainsaw or using a hand tool and digging fire line. So you have that pack, and then that pack is filled with gear. So essentially you need everything that you would need to be self-sufficient for 24 hours. The expectation is that anytime you go out to fight fire, you could be out there, you know, unsupported for 24 hours. So you have a couple of MREs for food, at least a gallon of water, all the gear that you need, you know, to fight the fire, plus your personal gear, you know, your everything down to your toilet paper. You have fire flagging, you have a lighter, you have a knife, you have rope. So all that gear adds up to at least 45 pounds, but that's just kind of, that's the basics. And then most people are carrying, you know, tools, extra, you know, jugs of like fuel, maybe a chainsaw if you're a sawyer. So yeah, it can add up to quite a bit depending what you've added on to that base of 45 pounds.
MREs are meals ready to eat, right?
Yes. Sorry, I should have said that. Yeah. Which are, you know, what soldiers usually eat when they're out in the field. I do not love an MRE, so I tried to avoid them. I would like pack a bunch of snacks in my pockets and try to avoid the MRE at all costs, but sometimes you get desperate.
Well, it sounds like you were training for the military.
It is. From what I hear, obviously I've never been in the military, but from what I hear, it's quite similar. And I worked with a couple of former Marines, and I worked with a guy who used to be an Army Ranger. And the consensus seemed to be that fighting wildfires, at least on a hotshot crew, was at least as difficult, if not harder. So yeah, very similar.
And you were able to carry all that weight?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I trained up to it. You kind of start with 30 pounds, and then you add another 5, and then you add another 5, and then you add a chainsaw. I got up to the point where I could carry, you know, 90 pounds, 100 pounds. I'm not moving fast at that point, but you can do it.
Okay, well, we need to take a short break. My guest is Kelly Ramsey, author of Wildfire Days, A Woman, A Hotshot Crew, and The Burning American West. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Kelly Ramsey, a poet, fiction writer, and author of a new memoir, Wildfire Days, A Woman, A Hotshot Crew, and The Burning American West. So, Kelly, you were in your 30s doing the work with 25-year-old men.
Yes.
How did they accept you?
Well, it took a minute. So at first, I had expected them to be, maybe hostile or to tell me that, you know, women didn't belong there or something. But nothing like that happened. It was more just that they were a little wary. They hadn't had a woman on the crew in 10 years. So they weren't exactly sure how to talk to me and how to act around me. And I think they were afraid of saying the wrong thing. So it was just really awkward in a social sense. And then in the physical sense, I needed to prove myself. And I had the sense that they were willing to give me a chance, but I really needed to show up and, you know, overperform in order to prove that I was capable. So, you know, my first hike, I really didn't do well. And I could see the disappointment in their faces. And I was extremely disappointed in myself, of course. So I would train, you know, after work, I would train on the weekends, I'd push myself on every hike. And it took about the first 3 to 4 weeks of training. You know, we do like a month of training at our station before we go out on any fires. And it took me a few weeks, but I got up to speed and I could keep up with the main pack. And I could see that I had started to earn their respect for that. And then as the season went on and I, you know, volunteered to carry really heavy things and I, you know, dug line as hard and as fast as I could, you know, I could see that I earned a little bit more respect. And that I also worked on the social aspect of trying to be able to talk to people and put them at ease and make them comfortable. So it all took a couple months, but eventually I found my place there and I felt that they respected me and treated me as an equal. And yeah, it worked out, but definitely there was some time and some really intense effort involved in making my place there.
Well, you do write about one of your experiences in digging the lines, and that was quite tough. How'd you overcome that?
Well, it really was just time and repetition, I think, in terms of digging line. You know, my tool was a Pulaski, and you need to be able to do, I don't want to get too technical and in the weeds here, but you need to be able to do a few different tasks. It has an axe end, you know, it looks like an axe blade, and then it has this adze, which is this wedge-shaped end that you use for loosening the earth. So you need to be able to swing the axe, just like you would swing any axe, and cut roots. And then you need to be able to move the adze end like a mallet, almost like a croquet mallet, a low swing in order to break up the earth. And so both of those are different skills and movements. And, you know, it's just like anything, your body has to get used to what the movement is. You need to be able to like hit the axe at just the right angle to cut the root in one swing. And so really it was just like watching how the really skilled guys did it and try to mimic their movements. And then just, you know, in 2020 in particular, it was such an insane fire season. I got a lot of practice in digging lines. So I think it was maybe 3 months in that I started to feel like, okay, I'm now able to do this proficiently. I'm doing okay. But, you know, hours and hours and hours of practice at that point.
Well, you mentioned the social environment as well. I understand in one scenario where you stood up when the guys were making inappropriate jokes about women. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so one of my colleagues who was, you know, very young at the time, he was, I think, 19. So he's 19, I'm 38. I think I was almost the same age as his mother, which is just wild. We're working together, we're digging line next to each other, and he turns around and he makes a joke essentially comparing a woman to a dishwasher. Like, I think the punchline of the joke was, I don't need a dishwasher, I have a wife. And I just turned to him and I was like, no, you're not going to say that in front of me. You know, there were sexist comments can happen a lot, almost unconsciously within a group of men. And to a certain extent, I would let things roll off my back, not really make a big fuss. But with this one, you know, I just sort of spun on my heel, faced the guy, and I was like, no. And to his credit, he apologized. And then he seemed to think about it and he apologized again later. And it actually was like a watershed moment in our relationship. And I felt like we became better friends after that, partly because I had stood up to him and kind of put him in line.
You set those boundaries.
Set those boundaries, yeah, and he respected them.
Tell me about some of the memorable fires you worked on.
Oh, man. So the August complex is one of the first ones that comes to mind, just because it was the, you know, first million acre fire in California history. That was pretty memorable. Just the scale, the scope of a fire that size, you know, it was managed by Cal Fire and the Forest Service. It took 5 hours to drive from the east side to the west side of the fire. And we saw some really insane fire behavior in October, which is surprising, although increasingly not surprising. So that one, the North Complex, the Dixie Fire in 2021 is another. That fire almost reached a million acres. Just saw some really wild fire behavior. The Dixie just put up a huge column and it actually crossed the crest of the Sierras west to east, which is one of the first times that a fire has done that. So just these pretty big historic moments.
And you were there.
Yeah, we were there. You know, and of course you just see your little piece of the fire and what's happening right where you are. But then maybe when you're driving out at the end of the day, you see this huge column or you hear that somebody got trapped in a tunnel and had to be rescued by the fire train. You know, just these really wild things happen. And sometimes you're seeing them with your own eyes. Sometimes you're hearing it over the radio, but just really wild things that I never would have imagined seeing.
My guest is Kelly Ramsey, author of Wildfire Days, A Woman, A Hotshot Crew, and the Burning American West. Part of your experience was through relationships, and you talk about a number of them. Tell me about Josh.
Okay, so Josh is a pseudonym for my partner at the time, who I was living with back home while I went and fought fire, and he was also a wildland firefighter. So, you know, we were in a committed relationship. We lived together. We were engaged, but we had these summers where one of us would be gone on a fire, and then while we were gone, the other would leave, and then by the time that person got back, the other had left, and so you're just really ships passing in the night, and that put a huge strain on the relationship. I don't want to spoil the plot of the book by telling everyone what happened, but yeah, it definitely was very difficult to sustain a relationship under those circumstances. And I know a lot of firefighters who struggle with that same thing because you're away on assignment most of the time for 4 to 5 months. That is difficult on a home life.
Another woman joined the crew, Addison. How'd she do?
Well, she had a bit of a tough time, especially at first. And she also, you know, she just had a different way of seeing her role as a woman on the crew than I did. I tend to be, you know, a pleaser. If there's a call to assimilate and fit in, I will do it. And I'm not even saying that's a good thing. I think I will do that to a fault sometimes. And I'm a perfectionist. And she was sort of like, I want to do this my own way. I don't have to please everybody. You know, I don't have to be exactly like the guys. And, you know, there were times where I really admired that. And there were times where that became difficult. And so we ended up clashing quite a bit. And, you know, in hindsight, I really think I should have let her fight fire in the way that she wanted to. And we could have been, you know, two very different people on the crew, both women, but I kind of encouraged her to do things my way. And I regret doing that. But it's really hard when you're the only woman on a crew. You're kind of tokenized as like, okay, we have this one girl, but she's doing well. And this is what all female firefighters must look like because she's the only one we have for a reference, you know? And then when you have two, you can end up being polarized. And so you have like, here's our good girl and here's our girl who's more difficult, you know? And I think that's one of the problems of being in a really extreme minority is that you can't just be a normal person. You're a symbol.
You also write about some of your other friends. Eddie comes up quite a bit. Tell me about Eddie.
So Eddie was one of my first friends on the crew. You know, as I said, it took me a little while to kind of break the ice and really form bonds with some of these guys because of the gender gap, let us say. And Eddie was one of the first ones who just was warm and friendly and treated me like a person. And we found that we both loved country music and Americana. So we bonded over that quickly. And he also was just one of the more sensitive guys. You know, there's a lot of machismo in fire culture, and takes a while to break through that and see who people really are and see their more vulnerable sides. And Eddie is a person who just is more emotional, more vulnerable. He's going to hate that I said this, but he's wonderful and so kind. And so, yeah, our relationship became a close friendship. And then, again, I don't want to spoil the book, but it started to become something more.
In your book, there's some flashbacks. And you talk about your dad. Tell me about your dad.
Yeah. So my dad is a wonderful, creative, beautiful soul of a person, but he had a really hard childhood and life. And he eventually, I think, to self-medicate, turned to alcohol. And so throughout the series of those flashbacks, I track how through my childhood and adolescence, he became more and more of a severe alcoholic and eventually lost his work and then became homeless. So a lot of the book, in addition to being about my journey in fire, it's really about my reckoning with grief over what's happened to my dad. And it's about my search for, you know, how do I find my real family in this world?
You had siblings, you had a stepmother. What happened to them? Tell me.
Well, they all had a pretty hard time with my dad's alcoholism as well. My dad ended up leaving my stepmother after 18 years of marriage, and she at the time had four teenagers. So that was a really rough period. But in time, everybody has done well. My stepmother has remarried. Most of my siblings are married. My littlest brother actually just got married. And I think, you know, we all had to have our reckoning with letting go of trying to save our dad. And, you know, we had to reconcile ourselves to what sometimes can feel like an endless grief. But my siblings have really done that work too. And I think they have come, like me, to a place of acceptance.
Well, you tell us about the loves of your life. I think Matthew was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then Josh, Eddie. We learn about you and your love. And it seems that your love is fire.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, I think nature and the outdoors and especially fire is where I found myself and my own strength and found a way to kind of let go of my past and all of this sort of like, you know, dramatic personal history and romantic history. Fire really brought me a sense of my own capability and strength, and the camaraderie of the crew gave me a sense of home. So yeah, in a way, I think fire was the love of my life. Maybe still is.
It not only transformed your mind and your heart, it transformed your body.
Yeah, that's for sure. Although I'm not fit like that now. I had a baby this year, so things are different. But yeah, at the time, I became so much more physically strong than I had ever been before. Just, you know, muscles in places I didn't know you could have muscles. It was really amazing to reach that place and to see what my body could do and how I could transcend what I had thought of as physical limits. And I found that those weren't actually my limits.
And so are you thinking ever about going back?
I think about it all the time. And, you know, I'm going to say that I think maybe I'm too old, but then, you know, I've done something just as crazy before. But, you know, now I'm 43 and I have an 8-month-old baby. So I don't think it's going to happen for me anytime soon. But I miss it every year. I miss the work and I miss the people. And so maybe at some point when our daughter is older, I could do, you know, a job that was more focused on prescribed burning or, you know, there's jobs in fuels, which is where you're doing the preventative work to try to treat the forest and prevent such severe wildfires. So something like that. Maybe I do think about it so much, but I don't think it's going to happen in the next year or two.
And you're in Northern California.
Yeah, in Redding.
So you're still right there in the mix.
Yeah, I think in some ways, Redding is like the operational epicenter. You know, we have North Ops and Big Forest Service Station here. But then also when I was fighting fire, Redding is this place that we were constantly coming through on the way to and from any kind of fire. You know, it's like this way station of firefighters. And living here, you know, I'll see the green crew buggies, and I'll see like tons of red Cal Fire engines every summer, and the town just fills up, and you'll see every hotel's parking lot is full of fire vehicles. So Very much still in the center of it. If I would want to go back to it, I'm well positioned.
Well, thank you for writing this book. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have.
Thank you so much, Mike. It was really an honor to be here. And I love this radio station. I was a listener when I lived up there. So really special to be able to talk with you today.
Well, we're especially glad to have you on. My guest was Kelly Ramsey, author of Wildfire Days, A Woman, A Hotshot Crew, and The Burning American West. I'm Mike Green.